Good evening. Wanted to get a quick start. It's a double parsha from Achrei Mos and Kedoshim. What's very interesting right away is we notice in Parsha Shemini that we have read almost 2 weeks ago now, with the death of Nadav and Avihu, and then we have two parshas in between that we read last week, Tazria and Mitzora, which are very interesting that it's placed in between. Of course, Aaron HaKohen, Moshe's brother, had to deal with it in real time. But there's always a message from the Torah, the way the parshas are placed. And the lesson over here is Aaron is suffering a great pain. Whenever somebody suffers a great loss, such as Aaron lost his two prized children at this point in time, as we see Moshe tells him, Bikrovai Kodesh, they were the apple of his eye. They obviously next in line initially to succeed him. But now he's lost them, and he's in great pain. And the message is to leave somebody to digest, to process the information before you attack him and tell him what's going on. And Moshe certainly doesn't know exactly what to say, because it's very difficult to know when somebody has suffered that amount of anguish. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to come and talk to Moshe Rabbeinu himself and say, which seemingly would be a very extra word in the pasuk, and it says "Daber al Aaron Ochicha." We obviously know that Aaron is his brother. So, what is the placement of the word "Ochicha" coming to tell us over here? It is that God is telling Moshe, "Daber al Aaron Ochicha." Speak to your brother. Speak to Aaron. He's your brother. Who else can talk to him? Aaron is the greatest living Jew at the time, other than Moshe. Who could make him feel better? Who can express himself and talk to him to make him get over this on some level, at least, to put it into context and move on with his life? Only Moshe Rabbeinu would be able to do that. And he's saying, please speak to him. He's your brother, which is a very important part to know. Many times we're in this situation and we don't know how to say something, which is why when we pay a shiva call many times, we are told to just sit and let the person who's grieving, the person who's observing shiva, start the conversation. And it's a tremendous lesson, and we have very few lessons in the Torah that tell us how to deal with bereavement, how to deal with grief under these circumstances. We know most of halachas either from Aaron here or from Yecheskel Hanavi, when he lost his wife. And these are things that we go and we look for, but that's why the halachas with regard to observing mourning halachas is we are more lenient, because we don't have anything in the Torah that really tells us outright exactly how to observe it on most levels. Now, the interesting thing with the parasha, it tells us, of course, the good deal of the parasha deals with the service that is done on the day of Yom Kippur. Now, the overall, the interesting fact is that the Kohen Gadol has to go to the mikveh five times during the day, because there are five different sections of the day, and each section is broken up by him changing his, going to the mikveh, changing his clothing, putting on fresh clothes, and getting about the next carbon that he has to bring. Which is why, in effect, as well, that Yom Kippur is the only day of the year to connect with the five times the Kohen Gadol goes to the mikvah, the five Shmoneh Esreis that we have, that we say, we have Nila that we'd never have any other time. And so that represents five Shmoneh Esreis that we say in Yom Kippur, and that is for that. And also, against that, we have also five Inuyim on Tisha B'Av, on Yom Kippur. We have five things that we're not permitted to do, you know, like wearing shoes, wearing leather shoes, and washing and eating and drinking, things of that nature. So there are five things as opposed to that. There are always lessons in everything that we do. The next thing is very interesting, that the Torah wants us, why, of course, it seems obvious that we wouldn't want to be having eating or drinking if we're praying for our lives, But the point is, we want to be focused and not have any other interest, because what the Torah is telling us in the language, once again, we have to look at the Chachamim, were very wise in pointing out every single, that when God wrote the Torah the way he did, when he dictated it to Moshe, he chose every word and every spelling of every word very carefully. And it says, Ki bayom hazeh yichaper aleichem. You don't get to choose other days. If you have something comes up on Yom Kippur and you want to take care of it, and you'll figure you'll fast on another day or you'll do tshuva at another time, God is telling you over here, Ki bayom hazeh yichaper aleichem. I have chosen this day. So I want everyone on the same page, since all Jews are ravens, zelos, that are responsible from one to the other. I need everyone to gather around and everyone to be on the same page at least one day a year to do tshuva, that everybody should be fasting. Everybody should have their mind on the tefillah, on the service that the Kohen Gadol is doing on that one day. And that's what it is. Ki bayom hazeh yichaper aleichem. On this day alone, God has chosen to forgive us all, for provided, of course, that we are sincere in our thought process of what we plan to mend our ways to do tshuva, and for that we'll get our kapora. Now, it's interesting. One of the things that we do, if this is something that always strikes me, is how many things in the Jewish religion have been taken over in other religions throughout the centuries. And most of the things that we know, certainly in Christianity, we're well aware of so many different things that are taking root in Judaism. But one of the interesting things is, we know that we have the Kohen Gadol takes two seirim, these two goats, and just they choose. One is brought for a sacrifice and one is thrown off a cliff. And it's just to simulate how our lives are just hanging in the balance. And it's very interesting, because in Japanese culture, there is a ceremony where once a year they throw a goat off a cliff. And that is something that's really very strange. Where that comes from, we don't know. But it's certainly, we don't know where all the lost tribes come from, obviously. It's easy to think that certain facets of every culture are rooted in Judaism that we don't know. And little by little, I know I had a secretary one time that was telling me, and she was, her family emanated from Spain, and she used to tell me, after she worked in our plant at Alley Processing, where I worked for some time, and she would mention to me that she never understood, her grandmother used to light candles every Friday in a closet. She was a Catholic girl, and but obviously she came from Meranos. That's a very interesting thought process, and she realized it herself. And there are so many Jews around the world that don't know their beginnings. And it's always very interesting to find out, and it certainly brought back many, many people. Now, the other thing is, we move on to the parasha, trying to cover some ground as quickly as I can. It says, Ki Adam Hu Hanofesh, Banefesh Hu Yichaper. It mentions that phrase a couple of times, that Velosocho Hanefesh Im Abosor, and since the blood carries the life form. But the Sephorno makes a point of saying over here that the Sephorno lived from 1470 to 1550, and he was a doctor as well. So many of the Gedolim, so many of Rishonim, like the Rambam, like the Ran, and various other people were doctors, more than we even know. But even the Ran was a doctor for a sultan in Spain. But, you know, in the times when the Arabs were in control in Spain. But it's very interesting. He said that there was, he told everybody that the translation of this pasuk is that the blood carries oxygen, and the mental, the medical science of the day thought he was crazy. They didn't understand that. They didn't know. And of course, we know, obviously, it's been a long time that we do know that there's oxygen in the blood. And the blood, the life force of a person is in his blood, the life force of an animal in it. And the message is, once again, you are what you eat. And certain animals, you take on the wild animals who are like a lion or a tiger or a bear, who animals of prey, we might be taking on some of their characteristics. And therefore, we have to rid ourselves of the blood, and we're not allowed to eat any blood. Now, when we get in later after the Avodah of Yom Kippur, we get a very interesting pasuk says, right after this is over, and it says, God is telling you, you're going into Eretz Yisrael, and Kimasei Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yishavtem Bo Lo Sasu. The ways that the Mitzrayim live, I took you from, you just left Mitzrayim, and I don't want you to do anything that the Mitzrayim did. I want you to not to be at all. Don't take anything that you learned and carry it with you, any of their culture. I want you to rid yourselves. Don't be like they were. And Ukumasei Eretz Canaan, and where you going now, where you are, Sherani Mevi Eschem Shoma Lo Sasu, where you are going to, I don't want you to pick up anything from their culture as well, which is a very difficult thing. I mean, here we are, we're between a rock and a hard place, it would seem. Don't go here. You know, when we came, a lot of people, whoever they, when they ran away from Europe and they lived in a shtetl and they lived in their life, and now we come to America and we, you know, we thank God wherever we live, we become Americans, or we become French, or we become wherever we live, we become British, wherever we hang our hat, so to speak, and we pick up the culture of society. And God is telling us the problem is there are a lot of bad facets that we don't follow all the other cultures of the world. And the first thing that we mention is the root of immorality. And that's why what follows this immediately after this is all about the illicit sexual relations that a person might get into. And that's why, because in these countries, in Mitzrayim and in Canaan, they did not follow all these things. And, of course, we see the same relationships listed in Achrimos, and the next ones are listed in the Parsha again at the end of Kedoshim as well. And if we would like to know why they're listed, it seems to be listing twice. But we are told in the Talmud that, you know, Onesh, we know the punishment, it says Mosi Mos, but, or the Mayhem Bum, which always means Skila, but where is the warning? So Achrimos is the warning not to do it, and Kedoshim is, like with everything that is a commandment not to do, there is a warning, and then there is also, mentions it again as, what is the punishment for that? When the punishment is not listed in particular, when it just says that the person dies, it means chanek. When it uses the phrase, the mayhem bum, it means skila. Of course, by sreifa, it always says, boishti soreif. And of course, it doesn't mean the bodily mutilation. It's more like another vaviu, their insides burn. And we're always after not to mutilate the body. The only one that has any kind of blood is the skila, which is why it is the most severe of all those things. And that's why the burial grounds for each one of the Arba Misos Bezdin would be a separate cemetery for the Arba Misos Bezdin, because they would be on a higher or lower level, and we didn't want to associate one level with the other. But the point is, I don't want you to absorb the culture of all those people, which says a lot for why you, you know, for the people that live in the shtetl atmosphere and they keep to themselves, which there's something to be said for that, because it's very hard to keep away from the culture that we absorb in everyday life. You can't walk around with blinders on. You see it. But we hope that when we bring up our children through the yeshivas or for whatever school they're going to, they learn, at least they have a value system set up in the home which gives them the proper values to look the other way and not absorb the culture of society. And as we see what goes on in the world around us, certainly we watch the news and we see how all these terrible stories that we keep on hearing, and somehow it cheapens life. And God is very concerned that we absorb and take on those cultures. That's why the Jews in Egypt, after being there 210 years, even though they weren't enslaved for 210 years, but it broke them down morally for living amongst the Egyptians for that many years, they lost sight of where they came from, lost sight of where they would eventually go. And God was very concerned for that. So therefore, when this is over, we move on to the parsha of Kedoshim, the necessary fact that we've been dealing with Kedusha, with holiness, this whole Sefer Vayikra. And so we move on now that we know what we can't eat, what we can't do to keep ourselves pure. And so now there are other factors involved. The first thing you'll notice with Kedoshim is that there are different levels of an, after certain mitzvos, it says, Ani Hashem, and then there are some mitzvot that say Ani Hashem Elokeichem. What is the difference? In my opinion, what it takes a look, and if you'll examine it more closely, basically when it says Ani Hashem, these are societal laws that we can't live without. Everybody knows that you can't murder, you can't steal. Civilization could not exist in a rational form if we didn't observe certain commandments that are laws in every society on earth, basically. But there are certain laws that God is between God and his Jewish nation. And that is the laws that say, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am your God. The interesting thing is, certainly we would think when it says, Ish imo v'aviv tiro, v'yeshav sosai tishmor, we've learned before that it kabeda sovicho v'yasimecho, certainly we know that it's incumbent upon somebody in every society, basically, to honor their parents, or certainly not to desecrate the name of their parents. But there's a greater level of it. Judaism and the Torah, it tells us so many stories about the importance of treating a parent with respect that goes beyond the normal societal laws. And therefore, when it says, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am God, your God, because their level of honoring a father and mother is not the same as our level of what God considers Ani Hashem Elokeichem, which is why it says so many times in the Chumash that there's wiggle room on certain laws, but I don't want you to get over certain wiggle room. The interesting pasuk here in that pasuk the reason I brought it up was Ish imo v'aviv tiro v'yashav sosai tishmoru. And the Talmud darshens that pasuk, which teaches a very important law. It's a very great question. When does a positive commandment override a negative commandment, and when does it not? And we know how come when we wear a pair of tzitzis. Now, originally tzitzis had the tcheles, and the Kohen Gadol wore certain garments that had shatnez in it. And of course, it says lo sul ba shatnez. But the Torah says gedilim tasa lo sul ba shatnez gedilim tasa lach. One should not wear shatnez. However, that, you know, beggar tzemru fishtim yachdav, wool and linen together, but gedilim tasa lach, you have to wear tzitzis. Well, that's a contradiction right there, because the original tzitzis that had the tcheles in it, the blue string, the tzitzis originally that was made from, you know, the woolen garments, and it had linen. So how could that be? So we know that an asay, a positive commandment, takes away, overrides a negative commandment. But then how come when it says Ishimo v'aviv tiro, why in that same pasuk it says v'yashav sosai tishmoru, but remember to keep the Shabbos? Because we are told that even though the Torah tells us to honor our father, to fear your mother and your father, to honor your parents, it says v'yashav sosai tishmoru in the same sentence, because you have to obey. If your parent tells you to violate the Sabbath, one does not violate the Sabbath, because kulchem chayavim b'chvodi, they are, even your parents are responsible to respect and honor God's commandments as well. So you both have equal rights, and your father disobeying by telling you to do something to violate the Shabbos doesn't do it. So what we say is, asay docha lo sasay greida, a plain lo sasay. The difference with Shabbos, it is a negative commandment that has the penalty of a death penalty of Kuris. Of course, Kuris is when there are no witnesses. Obviously, if you were witnesses, you'd be brought to trial and put to death. But nevertheless, if without witnesses, if somebody violates the Sabbath, he gets Kuris. And so Ishimov Yaviv Tiro, but Eshav Sotai Tishmoru. If the negative commandment carries with it the death penalty, then one does not, one is not allowed to violate the positive commandment of listening to the parents. There's another phrase in there that is very interesting, and it says, Lo Sochlu Al Adam. And we are told basically, Lo Sochlu Al Adam, and we think basically, we're told in the Talmud that means one is supposed to pray before he eats in the morning. But what it in reality is, where if you take a look at the psukim before and after, is it talks about having your crops come in on time. It was the culture, and even as late as 1902 in Hungary, when there was the crops weren't going, there was no rain coming along. The people of the town who were Christian at the time, they asked the priest to please leave, go on a vacation for a week. And at that time, they brought sacrifices to their gods, and because they still believed in it. And the point is that they would have not just animal sacrifice, but human sacrifice to bring in the crops. So the point is, when it says, Lo Sochlu Al Adam, don't sacrifice anything bringing blood to me. I'm not interested in sacrifices. So that you want to sprinkle, the thought process is that blood is used as a fertilizer, and you might want to use the blood to sprinkle it along the ground. So Lo Sochlu Al Adam, it's not going to help you to do that. I don't want you to use blood as a fertilizer to help your crops come in. Of course, one very poignant thing is we know that v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, and that is to teach you very simply, is a lot of times, you know, when you see somebody do something and you make judgment, the truth is there are many times when if somebody would be seeing you do something, you understand why you're doing it and you're not doing anything wrong, but you say, listen, I understand what I'm doing, but the other person doesn't. But so you're giving yourself a pass here because you can well rationalize what you're doing. What the Torah is telling us, you know, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, the same way you know what you're doing, possibly we should understand that the other person knows what he's doing as well. Keep it in the same vein. There's one other thing that I think is probably most important that we just, a very difficult thing to think about. It says, Lo tisnoe esochicha b'levavecha. And that is a law that we know, tit for tat. Now, we could love our neighbor and, you know, have a very good relationship, and then somebody comes along and you ask your neighbor for a favor and he turns you down, and you know full well he has a lawnmower and you don't want to give it to him, and he doesn't give it to you. And then sometime later he wants to borrow something from you and you have it and you're thinking, well, he didn't give it to me. So when I needed something, he didn't help me. Now I'm not going to help him. And that's what it says, Lo sisna esochicha b'levavecha. I don't like your game of tit for tat. Possibly if you go ahead and show him that you're more giving than he is, it will change him. And these are very interesting things. And there was one very famous story, of course, and I, not to be a name dropper, but I grew up with him on, he was very close with the family. I went to yeshiva there as a child, but Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, and what he had one time in particular, this rabbi who had, after he gave some very particular rulings on certain issues, which were very controversial, and they picked up on it, and somebody went ahead and went through his svarim that he wrote, which I'll discuss at another time. It's a very interesting story, that in itself, but he wrote these svarim, and in it were some very controversial things, and he decided to, this rabbi went ahead and wrote a book to contradict everything and say what a terrible thing that what Rabbi Feinstein did was. He wrote a very scathing, point by point, a very scholarly book on what Rabbi Moshe did and where he felt Rabbi Moshe made very serious mistakes, and that he wasn't right in what he did. It was a very scathing book. And the person, in fact, the publisher asked Rabbi Moshe if he would be okay with it, if he published it. He said, go ahead. The guy is trying to make a living. Publish it. I don't mind. And then sometime later, that person, the rabbi who wrote this book, got in trouble with the government over tax returns, and he faced the prison sentence, and he came running to Rabbi Feinstein and said, "You're well known in the local government, and if you will write a letter of record, you know, a character reference for me, the judge who knows you, I was told that if you'll write me a character reference, it'll sit very well with the judge." And he wasted no time. This was late at night, and he sat down and he wrote the person a letter. When his wife came in later and said, "Who was that?" And he said, "And he, what did he ask you for so late at night?" And he told him, "He asked me for this letter to write for him." And he said, "And you helped him after what he wrote about you?" He said, "He's a fellow Jew, and he needed it. It was a chance to stay out of jail," which he did, which it did sway the judge. He wrote this character reference that he was a good person, and it helped. But the point is, here was an opportunity that no one would fault him for just saying, "You want to please leave my house at this moment." Rav Moshe was never that way. And there are so many little incidences in my life that I could discuss, which maybe little by little we'll talk about. And that is as far as we'll go tonight. Thank you, and have a good evening.